Good evening. This is Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth about the drug war. My name is Dean Becker. Our engineer is Steve Nolan. Cheryl is here to man the phones and the computers. We're going to have several guests tonight, including Howard Wooldridge, a 15-year police veteran. Will Dwyer will come on and talk about the hemp cycle. And we're going to have some folks in here to talk about next month's 420 music and Cannabis Odyssey. But first, the news. A Mexican drug lord has been arrested after a shootout. A man alleged to be one of Mexico's most powerful drug lords was arrested today in the border city of Matamoros, the latest blow to the country's powerful drug trade. Ociel Cardenas was detained during a shootout in Matamoros. Cardenas is the alleged leader of the Gulf Cartel, one of Mexico's largest drug smuggling rings. The FBI offered a $2 million reward for his capture. Officials say they didn't believe the arrest would bring down the Gulf Cartel. Raymond Arellano Felix was fatally shot by police a year ago in the Pacific Resort of Mazatlan, while his brother Benjamin was arrested a few weeks later at his home in Puebla. Drug organizations in southern Guerrero State have stepped up attacks against federal police helicopters, causing three to crash this week alone. Evidentiary hearings are set for the Tulia drug cases. Court-ordered evidentiary hearings are set to begin on Monday for four men convicted in the 1999 Tulia drug bust that civil rights groups have claimed was racially motivated. The appeals court also wants to know whether the state failed to turn over information from Coleman's background that he may have impeached his testimony. The proceedings were expected to last through the week at the Swisher County Courthouse in Tulia. This next week, we'll be bringing you sequential reports live from Tulia, daily reports to report on the progress. It seems there are going to be eight attorneys from prestigious New England law firms there trying to investigate the hypocrisy of Tulia, Texas. Let's see, Tom Coleman, the officer who made these arrests on his own, the lone Coleman, as I like to call him, well, he had worked alone with no audio or video surveillance. He had little or no corroborating evidence. And he was later charged with theft and abuse by official capacity by Cochran County officials. These arrests have gained national attention and have led to allegations of racism, the filing of civil lawsuits and investigations by the U.S. Department of Justice and the Texas Attorney General's Office. Fiasco casts doubt on drug cases, too. This story comes to us from Tom Marshall. He says Houston's police crime lab also tested the drugs which were busted in Harris County, and this opens up another big can of worms. He says Harris County District Attorney Chuck Rosenthal asked Houston police officials to look into how all forms of evidence, including drugs, were processed at the lab. I mean, you take a minute and you stop and think about what they did up in Dallas, where they had sheetrock scandals, people getting sent to prison for years and years for having sheetrock. It could have happened here. Who's to say it didn't with that horrible mess they had at the crime lab? This is from British Columbia, Canada. Experts warn aluminum and heroin is a devastating mix. A Royal Canadian Mounted Police toxicologist has a chilling warning for those who chase the dragon. He says, don't smoke heroin, period. But if you do, don't smoke it off aluminum. There seems to be an interaction between some of the things heroin is cut with and the aluminum foil that causes a toxic reaction. He said three people have died and at least seven more have suffered serious brain damage after smoking heroin. Here's another one. In a recent showdown, a House panel is going to probe a U.S. judge. It seems the House Republicans are planning to subpoena records of a federal judge they say broke the law by letting drug offenders off too lightly and then misleading lawmakers about it. Here's a different little story. What are police supposed to do with confiscated money? In Georgia, no one seems to know. Police there are seizing drug money and using it with virtually no oversight from the state. In some cases, the money is used for police Christmas parties. Police in North Carolina are having a difficult time keeping track of drug evidence. A burglar there has stolen hundreds of pounds of marijuana from a police evidence room there this week. Police in Allentown, Pennsylvania are protesting proposed new drug rules that would fire officers for a single positive drug test. Of course, officers from neighboring cities came to join in the protest. More drug testing news from the other side of the prison door. Last week, Nevada legislators proposed drug testing prison inmates before allowing their release from prison. Now, the enthusiasm for such a policy has been dampened a bit by the fact that an existing state program to test drug parolees has already lost funding due to budget cuts. Now, let's go ahead and bring in our friends from the 420 Music Fest and find out what's going to happen. Folks, this is on Easter weekend. It's a Sunday, and it's going to be at five venues, including... Well, I lost my list here, but we're going to have five different venues. We're going to be at the Rhythm Room, we're going to be at Walters, we're going to be at Silky's, we're going to be at Fat Cats, and tell us who you are. What are we up to here with the 420?
My name is Alex Lozano, and my company is Houston Music Alliance, and along with Herman Garcia from Graphic Productions, we're just putting on the 420 Fest, trying to help out Normal.
And I appreciate it, guys. Y'all are putting a lot of work into it. You got some great bands lined up. Tell us some of the folks that are going to be there.
We got a bunch of guys. We actually got some blues and jazz legends. Oscar O'Bear and his 420, his 420 band. He's going to love that.
Yeah, bud.
People like Gary Dorsey at the Rhythm Room. Is it all right if I name off just a few from
Michigan? Yeah, you betcha. Go ahead.
All right, I appreciate it. At the Rhythm Room, Going Postal is playing there. Gary Dorsey and Walter Dawes, Layden, Bad Candy, and then over at Walters, a really great band. You got to see these guys, Slop Jar Jr. He's an amazing singer. He used to play with a band called Global Village. That's Slop Jar Jr. Then, like I said, Oscar O'Bear, the Big Lizard Boys. Eric Fiegel and the Fumigators, and then over at Silky's, one of my favorites, Lisa Harrington. She's one of the best drummers around. Jimmy's Pawn Shop, the El Toros, Mark Zeus and the Thunderbolts. Then over at Fat Cats, South, Fallen Line 4, and a Burnt Face Jack and Soar, and a bunch of other bands over there too. Just too many to name. At the Fat Cat Outdoor Hemp Stage, it's going to be Lycophile, Full Circle, Elemental, Leroy, The Prophet, and Deep Six, and a few other bands. Well, I'm sure we'll mention them before when we come here.
Yeah, we'll be back reporting on this again in a couple of weeks once we got it all more finalized.
You wouldn't believe how excited we are to do this for you guys. I mean, if you really know, we want to do some other shows me and Herman have already been talking about, and to do our part to help Normal and see if we can get some other people motivated and get them signed up. And
you bet.
And really, really try to make things happen. And
Well, the good thing is, I mean, we're starting to recruit a lot more folks. Just because I think of the general news, maybe it's some of the involvement here at KPFT, but I think in general people realize this drug war can be ended and they're starting to get on board.
Oh, absolutely. I totally agree with you and what you guys stand for. And I just, like I said, I just want to add value to what you guys are doing and do my little part, me and Herman, to back this up. And also I want to go ahead and tell you right now, the Westheimer Street Festival will be back on Westheimer. That's big news.
Yeah, it is.
After having it out with City Hall so many times, we're just going to do it. And it's just going to happen. And they got to do what they have to do. But it's going to happen. And it's supposedly going to happen sometime in June during the Gay Lesbian Pride Parade. As soon as I find out exactly, I'll let you know. I'm going to have a stage out there, and I'd be more than glad to just help Normal out and have you guys involved in some capacity. So
well,
I just
you
want
bet.
You to know
you bet.
That.
Yeah, keep us informed, and we'll help keep the listeners informed.
I got just a couple of more stages real quick, which is really important. The Normal 420 stage, the outdoor stage, which will be free. It's an $8 cover charge. It's 18 and up. We're asking everybody to show up if you're going to, hang out.
That $8 is good for all these.
Yes,
venues.
Yeah, you pay one time and you get to go everywhere.
You can see 25 bands if you want to.
You can see 48, one 48, more than last right. year. One
wow.
more, yeah.
Yeah.
And, but on the Normal stage, we actually have a national recording artist who had a number three, number four hip hop song from Houston, Bigga Figgas. He's playing on, y'all's stage. And, Big Green Machine, Giancarlo and his stick.
Mm-hmm.
Very talented artist, Adoro Fault, Arise in Me, Chain, and Irene. And it's just going to be a lot of fun. We're going to be out there having a little bit of barbecue for the bands, do up some burgers, and just have a wonderful time and do another event. I'm waiting for Herman Garcia, my buddy. He's usually here before I am.
Yeah, well, thank you for all you're doing, Herman. We'll bring him on next time we do this. Well, Alex, I appreciate it. We'll alert the folks on the 420s. And, folks, this helps raise money for Normal. This helps bring about the end of this madness here in Texas, and we need your support.
The times, real quick, I just wanted to tell you, I apologize, 3 till midnight. So after you finish Easter egg hunting, get your butt down there and come and support Normal and this cause.
It is the Christian thing to do, folks.
That's right.
All
peace.
Right. Thank
I'm
you.
I'm out.
All right, Alex. Okay, folks, we're going to get a hold of Howard Wooldridge here in just a couple of minutes. In the meantime, I want you to hear this song. If you just give it a listen, think about it.
When you can't believe a word they say, and you're haunted by the swords they raise. Like a rabid dog we've seen before, they refuse to hear the world pounding down their door. We don't want your war. Let's all yell a little louder now. We don't want your war. All stand together tall. Telling us we do. The king has no clothes, so he leads by fear. We must challenge all the lies we hear. The devil's bombs cause an oily smell. Brings a legacy with infamy. He burns it into hell. We don't want your war. So yell a little louder now. We don't want your war. All stand together tall. We don't want your war. You keep telling us. You keep telling us we do.
Well, Howard, if you're out there listening on the internet, apparently all circuits are busy or something. I don't know exactly what's going on. If you would, give us a call. Maybe you're on a different line or something. 713-526-5738. I'm going to read a little bit more news to you here. Here's one that just came out today. As of Monday in Holland, marijuana is not only going to be available, hell, it's going to be legal. It's going to be in the pharmacies. It's going to be licensed and distributed just like any other drug. They say in order to establish a stable, quality-controlled supply of the medicine, the Dutch government will shortly begin contracting with medical marijuana growers who will be required to meet specific standards covering basic quality as well as security rules designed to prevent diversion into the illegal market. Now, their spokesman, Bas Kulik, of the Dutch government's Office of Medicinal Cannabis, said that he expects the first contract to be signed somewhere near the end of March, with the first crop reaching pharmacies in September. Now, I'm sure they can provide some well before that. Now, once this system is in place, pharmacies will be required to dispense only medical marijuana from those government-licensed providers. Until then, they will be permitted to obtain the medicine from producers of their own choosing. While the Netherlands is a second nation to formally sanction the medical use of marijuana, it is the first to incorporate it in its standard system of prescription drug regulation. The Canadian government, of course, established a medical marijuana program in July 2001, but only a limited number of patients have made it through the complex permission process. In addition, Canada has yet to provide these patients with a legal means of obtaining their medicine, a problem that has led to continuing litigation. Okay, looks like we do have Howard on the line. I might read you more of that, but it's a good sign coming out of the Netherlands that medicine is being recognized.
Actually, it's Will on the line.
Oh, you got Will? Okay. Hello, Will. Do you hear me? Punch him up. Hello, Will.
Hey.
Hey, what's going on?
Well, I'm the director of HempCycle. It's a nonprofit venture to educate the public about the global environmental, political, and economic advantages of the use of hemp as a clean, renewable alternative to petroleum and other fossil fuels. In this effort, we'll be beta testing a new diesel electric hybrid motorcycle developed by E-Cycle.
Would it be something if we could quit buying all this oil, wouldn't it? We might not have to go bombing other countries about twice a year.
Yeah, that's right. You know, Jack Hare estimated in his book, The Emperor Wears No Clothes, that a mere 6%, or about 136 million acres of U.S. landmass could be devoted to farming hemp as a fuel source, and it would eliminate our need for imported petroleum.
Well, I think that would, you know, they talk about hydrogen cars, this, that, and the other, but it would cost too much. Hell, we spend $700 billion a year for this gasoline. Mm-hmm. Let's invest a few hundred billion and change our methodology. Will, tell the folks, if you would, what your intent is. I mean, you're going to travel across country. What are you going to do with this cycle?
I'm going to be traveling throughout the country, making public appearances and demonstrations. The fuel for this motorcycle is going to be provided by the Hempery. It's one of the oldest existing hemp merchants in the United States. And right now we're trying to help E-Cycle promote their beta testing project on this new vehicle. Their specifications state that it'll reach a top speed of 80 miles per hour. It'll accelerate from 0 to 60 in 6 seconds, and it can travel 180 miles on 1 gallon of fuel.
Wow. Wow.
And according to calculations I've made based on those specifications and the average oil yield from hemp,
yes.
Theoretically the bike could circumnavigate the earth on about 2 acres of hemp.
2 acres of hemp, yeah. That wouldn't be something to put America's farmers back to work with a good livelihood again. A lot of refineries all around the country making this hemp oil.
Yeah, there's well over 30 nations in the world that are hemp-producing nations, and American farmers are just losing out on a lucrative market.
You betcha. You betcha. It's, it's as almost as insane as busting all those websites for selling bongs the other day. Well, what that means is a lot of folks in America are smoking out of dirty bongs now, and that's just pitiful. I don't know. Will, I think the hypocrisy is just so huge within this government. It's got to implode here soon. Let me ask you right quick. You're wanting folks to get in touch with you, perhaps help in this effort. Where could they reach you?
Our website is www.hempcycle.org, and my email address is webmaster@hempcycle.org.
All right. Well, Will, do keep us informed, and follow along with your efforts, and we'll try to see if we can't drum up a little support along the way and make sure that folks know what you're doing.
Okay, great.
All right, Will, thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right.
Maybe he's-
Folks, we seem to have solved our phone problems. We do have Howard Wooldridge, Officer Howard Wooldridge, on the line. And let's see if we can't bring him in right about now. Howard?
Hey, it's Howard and Austin.
How you doing, sir?
I'm doing fine. Yourself?
I'm doing well. Yeah, we had some problems, but we got you now, and that's the important part. Yes, sir. I hear things are busy in Austin.
Things are very busy in Austin, and it's been a very good week for drug reform.
Yes, sir. I'm looking forward to hearing what all's going on. Tell us about it.
Well, House Bill 715, as you're aware, is Representative Dutton's bill, which would move possession of 1 ounce or less of marijuana from a B misdemeanor, which is the same as drunk driving, down to a C misdemeanor, which is the same as running a stop sign. And that bill has been picking up support. I had some representatives from the fourth floor of the Capitol with lots of seniority say the bill is actually getting to have a decent chance of passing.
Wonderful news. Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I understand there's a bill. Was it House Bill 801? They're talking about doing away with the multi-jurisdictional task forces.
Right. 801 is authored by Representative Keel, a Republican out of this area near Travis County. And he's a former prosecutor and sheriff. And he has sponsored that bill to basically save the state of Texas about $200 million a year.
Wow.
In money. And then that's concrete. And then I think the reason behind it is, of course, with all the scandals and corruption and problems those organizations have had, these multi-jurisdictional drug task forces, that it's just simply time to pull the plug on a bad concept.
You bet. You betcha. I understand that, you know, here in Houston, Tom Marshall even wrote a column about it, the fact that the very same lab that tests the DNA that was careless enough to send people to prison for, DNA incorrectly analyzed. This is the same folks doing all these drug tests for thousands upon thousands of users and dealers, I guess.
Ouch.
Yeah. I think a terrible situation. Howard, for those who may not know, tell us what some of the other things, other tasks that you perform for the state of Texas.
Well, what I'm doing right now, I'm a full-time paid lobbyist by Texas Normal. And I've been 40 hours a week down at the Capitol talking to mostly the aides of the senators and the representatives. I've met with probably about a half dozen, maybe close to 10 of the actual senators and representatives. Usually it's the aides, though, because everybody's pretty busy.
Right.
And I speak first and foremost about the House Bill 715, reducing marijuana from B to C. And then I also take some time to explain medical marijuana in terms of, you know, what do we want to do with this in the future, and the fact that it's simply a rude behavior on the part of Texas government to stick its big nose into every doctor's office in the state and tell doctors around the state what is and is not medicine. And it's been very receptive, of course, between the sympathy and the being sympathetic to carrying a bill, as I'm sure you're painfully aware, it is not going to happen this session.
No, you're right. Every person I spoke to up there said, yes, it's a great idea, it needs doing, but gosh, we probably won't be the ones to do it. And it is a shame.
Yeah, well, on the other hand, I've been talking to some of the Drug Policy Forum of Texas people here, also my normal colleagues, and one of the things that we thought of, and again, this is my first time out, it is my first rodeo. But I'm learning quickly, and one of the things I've learned is that the problem that Keel had last time with his bill that would have had an affirmative defense for medical marijuana is the time it takes the office to handle the huge volumes of phone calls and emails and personal visits of both people for and against the bill. And one of the things that I was talking to Karen about, Hecula, is perhaps for the next session, when someone we can get somebody to agree to it, if we can give them perhaps, say, 40 hours of office time for free. You know, these guys are on a budget, and if we could have one person in that office who would handle all the inquiries and correspondence, et cetera, and visits on medical marijuana, that would take the pressure off the rest of the person's staff.
Right.
And maybe that's one of the tools we'll use is in terms of getting someone to sponsor the bill. Because as you say, a lot of sympathy, a lot of, yeah, boy, that would be great. But it does take not simply conviction and courage on the part of a legislator. It takes a huge amount of time.
Right, right. I'm sure it's right. It's a lot of involvement in lighting other fires around the building, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And taking a lot of heat. They take a lot of heat.
Right. Well, Howard, since we got such a late start, we've had one caller on the line here for a while. I want to go ahead and bring him in, and we'll answer his question, okay? James, can you hear us?
Hey, Dean.
Hello, James. How are you this evening?
I'm doing pretty good, man. I wanted to call and thank you for coming on my talk show today at University of Houston.
Oh, all right. That James. Hello, James.
Hey, man.
Yeah, Howard, you may not know, I appeared on the Houston, I'm sorry, Devil's Advocate show,
yes.
Right?
On the
Cougar Channel. When's that going to air, James?
I believe it should be about a week.
About a week.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let us know. I might want to get a copy of that if you get the chance. And I much enjoyed it. I felt like I didn't run them through too many times.
Well, I wanted to let you know that I think everybody learned a lot, and we really appreciate you coming on. And I guess the question I want to ask, the topic I wanted to present is, you hear a lot about illegal drug problems here in America, the illegal drug trade, and all the drug cartels and drug dealers and people on the street. You see a lot about that in the news. But what about the legal drug problem here in America? The problems that we have with drugs that are completely legal, and why are those drugs permitted to be a part of society and not the ones that are illegal?
Well, you hit it on the head. For police officers in America across the board, alcohol any given year will cause 10 times as much pain, suffering, and death as all the illegal drugs combined, okay? And the reason that alcohol is legal, again, is because we tried prohibition of that from 1920 to 1933. Our grandparents were wise enough to get rid of the prohibition. But this whole drug prohibition got started in the late 19th and early 20th centuries, which we still have today, starting in 1914. It was basically the people decided to take a medical issue, drug use and abuse, and moralize it and say, well, since it's not good for you, make it illegal. And this started us down the road 90 years ago, basically, of taking bad personal behavior and criminalizing it and saying, we're going to put you in jail because you're doing something harmful to yourself. And that's what we've had for 90 years. And with alcohol, they had to give it up because it was literally tearing apart the fabric of American society. However, now we've got essentially the same thing going on, but people are so ingrained with the prohibitionist concept, they think it's a conservative issue, when in fact, people who support prohibition, support the war on drugs, are basically flaming liberals. George Bush, our president, on the drug question, on the prohibition question, is a flaming liberal. He believes sincerely that more police, prosecutors, prisons, more government employees, more government is going to solve a bad personal choice. And, of course, he's sadly mistaken. But now conservatives have taken this liberal concept and say, well, now it's a conservative concept. Well, of course, it's not.
And I see, you know, I want to say one more thing. I see a trend kind of today in moving towards medication to solve a lot of society's ills. You see kids being taken into psychiatrists and being prescribed with drugs, Ritalin, Prozac, mm-hmm. different types right. of medication that are used to alter their personalities and alter their behavior, and that is seen as all right to mm-hmm. feed those children those pills that alter their mood, alter their behavior, and yet grown adults that are completely respectable citizens, have jobs, taxpayers, vote every year, cannot participate in drugs of their choice.
Right. Well, it's all about money. I mean, who's kidding who? You know, marijuana stays illegal because it is a feared as a competitive product by the alcohol and the pharmaceutical industries. Jack Daniels knows that if it were legal, tens of millions of people around the world would pick up a joint as opposed to a Jack Daniels from time to time, and they would lose profits. And the same thing, of course, with pharmaceuticals. You know, God didn't make no junk. It is medicine, but you can grow it in your backyard for $2, or you can pay $600 a month for Marinol at your local pharmacy. And irrespective of the fact that, you know, we got, 40 million Americans without health care, the pharmaceutical companies are going to protect their profits. They pay off basically both the Republican and Democratic parties and their individual people, politicians, and to keep it illegal. And that is, it's all about money. And until the people get excited enough about it, it'll stay illegal. The only thing that's going to trump the money is people getting out and voting.
Go ahead, James.
I saw a Simpsons episode one time where one of the jokes involved was that the marijuana advocates were too, I guess, forgetful, you know, to use a stereotype, too lazy, and they actually forgot to vote the day of voting. And I think that's kind of been stigmatized, the concept of a marijuana smoker being someone who is lazy and doesn't get out to vote. But does that have anything to do with it? Do you have problems with getting people out to the polls?
That's the same thing with stereotypical. I used to hear when I was living in Michigan how Mexicans were just a bunch of lazy people who took siestas all day. I came down to Texas and found out those people break their backs 16 hours a day in the blazing sun, taking jobs that a lot of good Anglos just wouldn't take. And it's the same thing here. I mean, it'd be tough to talk to a Mark Stepnowski or a Willie Nelson or tens of millions of other highly successful people who've led very productive lives, gone to the top of their game, whether it's the game of football or the game of music, have done very well for themselves. I can tell you back in the 70s when I became a police officer, they didn't even ask you the question, had you smoked marijuana in your life at that time, because 9 out of 10 people coming through the door at the police academy had already smoked marijuana, and everybody knew it. And we've all gone on to be very successful police officers and firemen. We still are. Now, most of us have stopped. I mean, I haven't smoked in 24 years, but at least coming through the door, most of us had years and years of experience with marijuana. We became productive persons, productive in our professions, including police work, firework, paramedics, doctors, etc. The stereotypes are just that, perpetuated by the federal government, even now, to keep people thinking this is the devil's brew.
If I may jump in here for just a second, you stop and think. One very notable, you know, elected official, Governor Johnson, admitted, his youthful indiscretion, if you will. And then there's the highly investigated and, you know, not totally proven fact that Al Gore and George Bush were drug users in their youth, and they survived and went on to lead productive lives as well. A person doesn't need the 10 years in prison to grow up.
Newt Gingrich led the Republican Revolution, and he smoked marijuana. I mean, this is, again, the mayor of New York, Bloomberg, I mean, all these people, 80 million people have tried it and used it, and most of them enjoyed it. And they're leading very productive middle-class lives, working 40, 50 hours a week, paying their taxes. But it's still that stereotype that we have to bust. And one of the things that's been I've been able to do in Austin is through my basically cowboy persona, been able to bust the stereotype of the person who certainly represents normal and who represents another successful example of someone who used marijuana for 8 years, stopped and went on to become a police officer and do fairly well at it. So it is happening, James. We are making strides, especially in Austin. Using the public safety argument has gained lots of traction. It's a brand new thing that the police officers such as myself, through LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, we're bringing to the attention of the American people that this war on drugs, every hour we spend looking for drugs is an hour we don't spend looking for child molesters, murderers, arsonists, people stealing your cars and breaking into your houses. It's starting to gain traction, and we feel confident that, we hate to throw out numbers in some one way, but another, we still feel, this may sound good or bad, but maybe in 8 to 10 years we'll have this thing over and done with.
Well, as a taxpayer, I mean, I'm sure we're all taxpayers here, you really become frustrated at the government, the administration, for using tax dollars huge amounts of tax dollars to produce and promote a campaign which uses huge amounts of misinformation and lying to make marijuana look like it causes all these societal ills. For example, specifically the commercial with the boy with the gun, where he picks it up. And now, here's an example of a example of misconduct, not by these boys smoking marijuana, but by their father leaving a loaded weapon on the desk where these boys are hanging out. What kind of father leaves a loaded weapon just sitting there on the desk for these boys to find it? That's the irresponsible behavior right there.
Yes, indeed.
No one ever says anything.
James, if I could, I want to interrupt here to alert the listeners out there. They can give us a call. We'll be taking additional questions, and our number here is 713-526-5738. James, I wanted to ask you right quick. You know, as a current college student, I want to ask just in general, what is the attitude of the students towards the drug war, towards the persecution that, you know, their buddies getting ripped off and so forth?
I'll tell you, honestly,
yes.
I think that most youth view the drug war as kind of a technicality. I mean, it's something that you don't really worry about. You just got to be, you know, careful to watch your back. And any party you go to, just about, there's going to be people using some sort of drug. And not necessarily illegal, but there's going to be some sort of drug being used in mass.
Sure.
And as far as illegal drugs go, it's like you said many times before, it's not that hard for anybody to find it. Even if you don't do drugs, you know somebody who can get drugs. It's not that far away. It's not something that causes you to not be able to get drugs. So why spend all that money trying to prevent people from doing drugs when you could be using that money for other things that need to be done, education and welfare, taking care of our sick and our dying citizens, and things like that? Why can't we divert those funds to those areas?
Well, I can tell you, James, in one sense, the reason it perpetuates is basically this prohibition is around for 90 years. It's the same concept as nobody wakes up in the morning and says, why is the sky blue as opposed to green or yellow or pink? It's always been blues. So that's just the way it is. And that's very much what we're having now with the war on drugs prohibition, is people don't even question the basic concept of the approach to these dangerous drugs being prohibition. They think that's just set in concrete and you can't change it, because, like, you can't change the color of the sky. And what we're doing in reform is getting people to look up at the sky and say, you know, it could be a different color. There are more ways to approach dangerous drugs than simply the prohibitionist model. And that's what we have to do, is basically wake up the people to the idea that there's more than one way to approach dangerous drugs, and this way we're doing now is certainly detrimental to everybody and everything.
A total waste of time, money, etc. You betcha. Well, James, I appreciate the call. And
hey, man, thanks very much. I appreciate it.
Well, you bet. I look forward to hearing back from you. Okay.
Good day, man. Thanks.
Okay, folks, we do have open lines, 713-526-5738. Howard, I understand that you got back, the first part of this month from Mexico for the International Drug Conference, right?
Yeah, myself and Jack Cole from LEAP, we both went down there for the three-day conference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, tell us about that. What was going on?
Well, there was a bunch of probably, I don't know, close to 250-odd people there from most every country in South and Central America, minus the Caribbean. Made a lot of good contacts down there with these people. I heard a little bit about what's going on in their countries and why, and got fairly well informed on some of the local issues in the individual countries as to where they are. Now, I don't think, from what I could gather, the reform movement there is nowhere near as high, as organized or as popular as it is here. And of course, we're not that popular here, so they've got even further to go than we do. But at the same time, it's a different culture down there. They're not used to participatory democracy for hundreds of years like we've had, so people are more reluctant, I think, to stick their neck out in a democracy that's only 15, 20 years old.
Right. Yeah. I think about the upcoming event they're going to have next month out in San Francisco again for the 420 normal convention. Are you going to be able to make that one?
Yeah, I'm going to make it. I've decided to go. It's important. This year, it's more than ever, it's important for reformers to get together and compare notes and make the contacts, because I think I've got some contributions to make to that conference in terms of what I've learned here in 2 months to Capitol.
Sure.
How to lobby for marijuana reform, sure.
I agree, Howard. It's so invigorating to find like minds and discuss solutions together. I'm trying to, hitchhike out there or something. I wish Ken Lay would loan me some money. We do have another caller online. Folks, we want to hear from you. Our number here is 713-526-5738. We have Amon, line one. Amon?
Yes, hello?
Hello, yes. Do you have a question for Officer Wooldridge?
I have a question and a comment. I just want to say that I heard that a small amount of drug that they're going to somehow they're going to consider like misdemeanor, like speed ticket and stuff like that.
Right.
But what I'm saying is, I just want to, my first question is, what is the most social problem that we have in this time in any nation? I mean, as far as the substance things that I'm talking about.
Oh, the right. Biggest problem with substance? Go ahead, sir.
Yeah.
From a police standpoint, Amon, the number one drug which causes problems for the police is alcohol.
Uh-huh.
From homicide, suicide, uh-huh. Armed robbery, child abuse, spouse abuse, you name it, alcohol, drunk driving deaths, bar fights, assaults and batteries, aggravated assaults. Alcohol by far is the number one problem drug for police officers in America.
Okay.
It's not even, marijuana, for example, in my 15 years as a police officer, I never went to one call generated by the use of marijuana. Not one.
Okay. But to a certain degree, they have also their own bad consequences, right? Do we agree on that?
They have their own what?
They have to the limited degree, not maybe as high as alcohol, but also the marijuana, any kind of narcotic, anything that you call drinking or smoking. They have all their impact, right?
Well, they all have an impact. But for example, drunk driving deaths in the United States, about 18,000 last year. They went up for the first time in 17 years. In my entire career in police work, talking to 500 other officers and being in contact with 500 other officers in the Lansing, Michigan area over 15 years as an officer plus another 5 years as a cadet, I never heard of, certainly never went to one, fatal or injury accident caused by a person high on marijuana. It is so seldom, because marijuana makes most people temporarily lazy and they don't want to drive. So most of the time people do not drive after they've been smoking. So for the police, it's like 0.001 is marijuana a problem with driving. I arrested about 400 people for intoxicated driving in my police career. Of those, 398 were high on alcohol. The other two were on painkillers, barbiturates.
Okay. So from my understanding, if I'm correct, what I understand is you just say that alcohol has higher degree of virality, and as far as causing social problems, that's the
right.
First problem that we have to tackle. Otherwise, if I understand you correctly, you're not saying that marijuana or any kind of narcotic is the solution for social problem, right?
Correct. I mean, now marijuana, most people, of course, use it, they smoke it. And marijuana is basically the combination of smoking a cigarette and drinking a beer.
Uh-huh.
All three are, in my opinion, bad choices unless you need them for medicine. I take basically a Mormon approach to drugs, and that is don't use any drugs unless you need them for medicine. That's the ideal, best way to go. That being said, it's a question of where do you want the thin blue line to go, the thin blue line meaning the police officers, because when when you have so many serious problems of robbery and assault and theft and car theft and people breaking into houses, murder, and then we spend so much time, instead of on those serious problems, we're spending millions and tens of millions of hours across the country trying to find marijuana in somebody's backyard or under somebody's front seat, while drunk drivers go right on by and kill people.
Aman, I want to thank you for the call. Suddenly we're getting a flurry of calls coming in, and it's getting kind of late. I want to get to them. But Aman, call us again next week, if you would.
I'll call you next week. Just don't forget the points, because I really wanted to further discussion on this point. Even I didn't present my comments, so anyway, maybe we have a longer time to discuss on this, and, you know, I will lie my opinion, and, you know, whether it is right or wrong, so I'll get my correction. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to be on there.
You bet. Okay, we're going to Cindy on line four. Cindy, can you hear me?
Yes, can you hear me?
I hear you. Yes, ma'am. You have a question from Officer Wilders.
Okay, well, what are Canada's laws? I just caught the last 15 minutes, so I'm ignorant if you've already said it. What are Canada's laws?
Canada has, in terms of medical marijuana, its entire, they had basically a Roe v. Wade type decision made about 2 years ago. There's medical marijuana across the entire country of Canada. Their police take a much more European approach to marijuana, where it's basically if you have personal amounts, you get it's like a traffic ticket, and they send you on your way. Now, cultivation is still illegal, and they do bust people for it, but the penalties are nowhere near as harsh as they are here. And more importantly, the Canadian Senate last fall came out with a report after 2 years of study that said that recommended to the entire Canadian government that they need to legalize and regulate marijuana as soon as they possibly can. And the government in Canada is now in a huge debate as to what to do, because they've been told the best thing to do is to end prohibition, make it a legal regulated product like alcohol is in this country, yet it's going to be tough for them to do that for political reasons.
Wow. Well, I have a question. This drug testing thing that goes on everywhere, do they do that in Canada, too, for jobs and stuff?
I don't think so, because I don't know if you did that.
Howard, it violates their human rights or whatever
right.
It is, charter, and they've determined that it's just not right.
Yeah.
Only for airplane pilots and such.
I really resent this drug testing thing.
Cindy, I want to thank you for your call. We do have a couple other callers. I want to get to them, and we appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
1 second. Okay.
If anyone had ever told me a few years ago that we would ever read headlines like these in American newspapers, I would have called him crazy. Yet here we are reading them. In the middle of the 20th century in the United States of America, hundreds and hundreds of teenage boys and girls are becoming hopeless dope addicts every year. It's fantastic, it's unbelievable, and it's terrible, but it's true.
Okay, a little blast from the past. Okay, we're going to Joy. Can you hear me? Joy?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
I do. Do you have a question for Officer Wilders?
You know, I just have a comment. I am a middle school teacher, and I come in contact, obviously, with a lot of children when they are getting ready to start possible drug use.
Mm-hmm.
And the school, the DARE programs and all that are being implemented in the schools, I just feel are so lacking, because I feel if we spent more time with our students and, you know, in families, like teaching good self-esteem and how to make good choices, I don't think that marijuana would be an issue. I think it'd be just like alcohol. It'd be a choice. If you'd like to drink, if you'd like to smoke, it wouldn't be an issue if we were teaching the children to make good choices and not, you know, just kind of throwing them to the wolves, and then they find ways to cope that are not the best choices. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, Joy, and in fact, you know, kind of extrapolating from that, in Holland, where they've had legal marijuana sales basically for 26 years, they've taken away the glamour factor of marijuana.
Exactly.
Teenage use per capita in Holland is one half that of the United States. They've taken away the glamour of marijuana, and they use it a lot less.
That's exactly what needs to be done. I know a note on the other caller who was talking about testing. Teachers are not tested, which I think is very amusing. I mean, I don't think you should
not
be tested. Right, exactly.
Yeah, except for people who are in sensitive positions of safety, like truck drivers, airline pilots, bus drivers, etc. Yeah, I'm opposed to testing. It's an insult to Americans, where you're basically guilty until proven innocent.
I totally agree. Totally agree. Well, thanks. I've really enjoyed your program. Just thought I'd put in my little 2 cents about that. Thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you so much, Joy. We appreciate it. Okay, we're going to move on now to what we got. Adam up on, no, Tony. Tony's up on line two. Tony, do you hear us?
Hey, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, Tony. It's good to hear you. Do you have a question for Officer Wooldridge?
No, I'm also on the comment range.
All right, well, go ahead.
Because so far, I've agreed with everything I've heard still on the show. I think he's an amazing person. I hope he keeps it up. I've been a father for almost 18 years, married about 20 years. And my daughter has seen me smoke. She's seen me drink and what have you. And if given a choice, she would much rather me quit drinking than smoking.
Sure.
I think domestic violence would go down a good bit.
Absolutely.
I mean, I'm seriously, because you can ask, you know, if she wasn't asleep, I'd bring her on the phone right now. But the few times we have had a few problems like that, alcohol had a serious problem to do with it.
Hey, I got arrested 13 times for being drunk with drugs in my pocket. Okay?
You know, and not to mention not only that, my daughter, she's fixing to graduate from Channelview High School, and she's already been accepted to Hollins University in Roanoke, Virginia, which is a very, very, very good university. She doesn't drink, she doesn't smoke, she doesn't do anything. And I never, you know, I was always real upfront with her, always told her what I did in the past, and always told her about my mistakes. And she, you know, and I think we're honest for our children, and we let them make their own choices, they'll make better choices than if we give them this hogwash the government gives us.
Yeah. Well, I want you to know I'm going to keep it up. Now, when I'm done here in Austin, I'm going to get back on my horse in Denver, and we're going to ride to Oregon and the West Coast to finish up our coast-to-coast ride. And as Dean knows, I wear my shirt which says, "Cops say legalized pot, ask me why." And I will spread the word like Paul Revere, as I already have from Savannah, Georgia to Denver.
Hey, Howard, everything you're doing works. Every person I talked to in the State House knew who you were, buddy. You're doing a great job.
Yeah, you know, Dean, I tell you what, I found out yesterday when I went back to one of the reps' offices, and they said, yeah, we know who you are. I was about to introduce him. I said, well, you know who you are. You do? Well, you're marijuana man. Everybody knows my cowboy hat. They know what I'm trying to sell to Capitol. And now apparently the entire building knows me as Marijuana Man, and I'm getting literally dozens of people now every day saying hi to me, kind of like a UPS driver. You know, you always wave to the UPS driver.
Well, hopefully.
And they're all waving to me saying hi, and how's it going, and how's your bill? And, I mean, it's really gratifying and good because obviously I'm generating some positive vibrations in the Capitol for House.
Oh, and on these phone lines. Tony, we got to let you go, buddy. I want to get to a couple of these other
folks. I got more to say, but let somebody else talk.
Thank you, sir.
Good night.
All right, good night. Now we're going to the next line. Who we got, Steve? It looks like Adam. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, sir. How are you tonight?
Quick question for
Adam. I'm enjoying your show.
Thank you. What? Are you there?
Yeah.
What'd you say?
I'm definitely enjoying your show. I just tuned in probably 10 minutes ago, so I missed most of it, I guess. But
We'll be on in 2 weeks, but what, you have a question for the officer?
I do. One of the things, that if I can have time to make a quick comment, I come from Ohio, and up there they sold liquor through state stores, and it was all state-owned and state-regulated. I always thought they should just sell all the dope through there, too, and, you know, it's really controlled. And the other question is for the police officer, sir, is if there are a number of police officers that feel the way that y'all do, can't through your labor union y'all form some kind of a movement from the inside that would expedite things or possibly even get to a point of striking on, like, arresting petty drug thefts, marijuana, and whatever?
No. The fraternal, I've contacted the Fraternal Order of Police, the largest organization in the country, and their official position is we don't care about what the law, we enforce the law, we don't make the laws, and they are, you understand that there's so much peer group pressure to continue prohibition. That for an officer to stand up and say, you know what, this isn't working, we need to get rid of prohibition, it's career suicide. The only reason I can do it is I'm retired.
Yeah.
All right, Adam, thank you so much. We got a couple more callers. Let's go ahead and go to Steven on line one. Steven.
I don't have any specific question. I just wanted to make a statement. I tried marijuana once, gave me the worst headache in the world. And for the longest time, I have been vehemently opposed to any kind of drugs. I'm a father of five, going on six kids. But ever since I started listening to your show and to the 420 News, I fully support what you're doing. I say legalize it.
Thank you. Thank you. That's very encouraging.
Thanks. Yeah. Understand that no matter what you, whether you smoke it or not, and I'm not encouraging it because I say it's like the combination of smoking cigarettes and drinking a beer, it detracts from your public safety.
Officers are going out of your district near your house to help other officers search under somebody's front seat. And if you have a 911 problem at that time, that officer is going to be an extra 4, 5, 10 minutes away from getting to your house. It does reduce public safety. It does affect you.
I hear you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen. Tune in 2 weeks, buddy. We appreciate it. Okay, let's go to Rick, line three.
How are you doing?
Hello, Rick. We have a question for Officer Wooldridge?
Yes, I just had a question, and he made a comment about regarding the DWI basically being the major source of danger in the on the roadways.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that alcohol was the major. And I agree, that's obvious. Alcohol is a very widely available substance that is promoted, in fact,
sure,
in such a way that even kids just are drawn to it. But with marijuana, he also made the comment that he never found a fatal accident with marijuana. I know alcohol can be tested through quick breathalyzers. How could an officer know whether a fellow was or a person was on marijuana when they got stopped necessarily?
Well, two reasons. For myself, I lived a college environment for 7 years.
Right.
I know what a stoned person looks like and acts like and talks like.
Right.
There's a telltale physical signs of the reddening of the eyes.
Mm-hmm.
There's a slurred speech. And if a person were high on marijuana, you simply take them to you arrest them for DUID.
Mm.
You take them to the hospital. You draw blood.
Mm.
You find out there's definitely they test positive for marijuana. Then
that's
you simply
THC.
Tell the jury that they couldn't say the alphabet. They were they're driving all over the road, and they would be found guilty.
Right.
Just like if you're high on barbiturates or Valium. We find people guilty all the time for DUID.
Well,
it's more of a hassle, but we can do it.
Howard, right. They may have slurred speech, but they're not running into bridge abutments. That's, I think, part of the difference there.
So it's a different kind of reaction deficit with marijuana.
Rick, we thank you so much. We're just about
thank
out
you.
Of time. We're having to wrap up. Please join us in a couple of weeks.
Appreciate it.
Y'all, next week we will have The Other Side with Glenn Urbach on at this same time slot. Howard, right quick, two questions came in from the Drug Sense chat room. I'm going to read them both, and you can respond as you can. We're running out. Have you had a chance to talk with Dan Solano, retired police officer in Michigan? And you support the Oakland Cannabis Buyers Club and Jeff Jones' personal sacrifices out there where he's been arrested for basically handing out leaflets?
Yeah, that to me is a First Amendment issue. You know, I wear my T-shirt all the time. As you know, Dean, that one guy got arrested for the anti-war T-shirt in some mall. It's a First Amendment issue, and it's a great way to spread the word down on the streets. But, yeah, that was a First Amendment issue all the way. People should be allowed to be informed by somebody passing out leaflets on the sidewalk in the United States of America that I want to live in.
Howard, I'm going to say this, and you got about 10 seconds. If they want to learn more about you, they can also go to Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. That's leap.cc. Say again?
leap.cc, Charlie.
Okay, and 10 seconds. What do you got to say, bud?
Hey, keep those letters coming in for House Bill 715. We're going great, but we still need your help. 715, tell your rep and your senator, send in the letter, please.
There's contact information at HoustonNormal.org. Thank you, folks, and good night.
Good night.
For my producer, Steve Nolan, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage, The Unvarnished Truth.